Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me once again on this palatial VoIP line in the middle of the internet is Shelby Mongan. Shelby, how are you?
You know, I am just great, Bill. How are you? I don't ask that enough.
Aw, thank you. I feel like you're always checking in on me, and I appreciate that. I'm D-Y-N-A-M-I-T-E. I've got no alibi. I'm dynamite.
I had to think so hard as soon as you started spelling. I can't do spelling out loud for some reason. I also can't. I'm bad at the alphabet. Like, I know all the letters, but if you ask me, like, if you gave me a letter and then had me name the letters that come after it in the alphabet, I'd have to start from the beginning and catch up to it. I don't know why. It's just my brain doesn't like it. And so as soon as you started spelling, I had a tiny, tiny panic moment.
K.
One's fine. I can do... Oh, no, don't ask me to come. What comes after it, Bill. I can't do it.
I feel like I was practically inviting you to do it already.
No, I can't. I can't do it. It's also like I don't know if they actually do this, but the stereotype that one of the sobriety tests that cops do is to have you name the alphabet backwards. And, like, I don't know if I could do that sober.
It's not easy. I would have to think about it a bit.
I have to just go through the alphabet every time until I get to the end and then say that letter and then start over again and get to one less than that. It would take forever for me to do.
So you'd have to go through the alphabet orthodox style and then work your way backwards?
Yeah, I think pretty much. I've tried to do it before, and that was the initial way I tried to do it. Maybe I should just practice it over and memorize it backwards so I'm just at all times prepared.
Something to consider for the future, you know?
It's a skill that I think I need to have in order to be a real adult.
You know, I mean, I wasn't going to judge you.
You should, though.
All right. Well, how about I start judging you right now with this question? Hey, Shelby, what you playing?
So again, given the sheer volume of chaos my life has been in recently, I haven't been playing as much as I'd like to, but there are two things that I want to talk about that I have been playing. And the first, of course, is the lovely Pokemon DLC, Isle of Armor. I had heard some bits and pieces about, but wasn't following closely. And then all of a sudden it was out and I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to get this. I'm going to try it because I really enjoyed, the game itself. I really had a good time. It's the first time I've played a full standard Pokemon game since to the begin, or from beginning to end. I haven't played one all the way through since Red, but I've played a couple other games here and there. I just haven't finished any of them. And so it was really, really satisfying to go back and finish an entire Pokemon game. I really loved it. I thought it was beautiful. I loved the camp. I think we talked about it on the show. But once I was done, as much as the raid battles were fun, I really didn't have a big drive outside of the story in the area to, like, I'm not a catch 'em all sort of person. I like building my team, building some folks in there, having fun, catching some, but, you know, not necessarily catching them all. So I put it down for a long time. And when Isle Armor came out, I was like, okay, cool. I'll get back into this. And it has been such a joy. It's been so nice to go back to. I love my team. I missed all my children. I have acquired new children. Of course, this game, I think, is getting the most hype based on not only adding more Pokemon in and more areas, but adding the ability, which, by the way, is behind a bunch of levels of tasks. So don't think you can automatically do this when you go start the DLC, but having your lead Pokemon walk around behind you in the game, which is so good.
That wasn't in the base game?
No. So that was in, Let's Go. I think it was in Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee.
Oh, okay. That explains it. That's the confusion.
But it was not in Sword and Shield. And so what's cool about this, though, is literally every single Pokemon can walk behind you. And they all have their unique animation. So if you, you know, if you have them in your Pokemon camp, you kind of get the gist of what they are like. And it's great. They're very, very funny. If you put a Slowbro out behind you and you walk anywhere, prepare yourself to wait 20 minutes for your Slowbro to catch up with you because he walks really slow. And like I pulled out one of my Pokemon, my Beware maybe, and it's like any of the massive Pokemon are massive. And it's really funny to watch them walk behind you, and some of them like spin around behind you or burrow or dig or run. Or it's just really, it's really, really satisfying to watch them follow around behind you in the world.
That was, I mean, always the cool thing with like Pokemon Yellow back in the day is like, oh, Pikachu follows you around. That's neat.
Exactly.
And just one little detail that like brings you further into that world. I like hearing that.
Yeah, it's another reason why I look back on that discourse about, oh, they're not putting any new battle animations in the new game. Blah, this is terrible. They're totally, Game Freak's totally slacking on the new Pokemon. And, like, the sheer volume of personality and animation and work that went into Pokemon Camp, that went into them walking behind you, all of the larger kind of personality they've built around all these Pokemon is so remarkable. It's just great. It's really fun. It's fun to have an excuse to play Pokemon again and to do something new. And then there's another DLC coming out after this as well. So there's another similarly sized. I don't actually know how long Isle of Armor's like main quest runs. I've been playing it for a few hours. I don't think it's going to be terribly long, but it's satisfying, and it's also opening up way more Pokemon that were not in the original game. So it's fun to have that kind of see more of your old favorites, see some more variety. I found a Ditto Island that was pretty cool. I will say, if you are playing now, make sure, I mean, if you at this point, I imagine, but if you do pick up, let's say you just pick up Sword or Shield and you pick up the DLC pass with it, everything there is leveled to level 60 or above, so do not go there unless you are prepared for that. But yeah, it's Isle of Armor is a lot of fun.
Were you excited to hear about the new Pokemon Snap game?
Oh my god, I'm so excited. I loved Pokemon Snap. I didn't own it myself, but I had a friend who had it and played it a lot with him. And I think it's going to be just a very lovely, relaxing game. I'm curious to see how they make it fun for longer than like 20 minutes. But I'm excited.
The original is not a terribly long game. Like most of it, you spend it going through the same courses over and over again. And like you need to like figure out the secret trick to unlock the next portion of the game. You know, you gotta bop an electrode so it self-destructs in a certain place and it blows up in a wall and you can go through to a different area, stuff like that.
If it's like a puzzle game, I was gonna say, if it's like a puzzle game on top of Snap, that could be really fun actually, but I'm we'll see how it actually goes.
What I'm interested in is if they can make it so, like, of course, with the Joy-Cons, you know, you have this experience where you can track movement. If you could get it so you could hold the Switch like a camera and then, mm-hmm. like, turn in a circle to, like, look at different objects in the Pokemon environment.
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be, like, it's almost like an augmented reality or, like, VR, but not in a headset. Like, just kind of augmenting what you see. That would be really cool. I think it would also give me hella Wii U flashbacks of, like, what that console could have been. No, I think that would be dope. I would really enjoy that. You just click the trigger, because that's like a camera. Oh.
I hope they explore as many ways as possible to, yeah, make the game social and like take advantage of the different Switch hardware abilities, because there's some cool stuff there. And like, I think one thing as someone who did not play Shield and Sword is that the social media aspects of that game really were interesting to see. Like everyone's like, look at my Pokemon. Ah, it's so cute. Totally valid. But also like including those tools in the game, even just with like the screenshot tool, is so handy to sharing your experience elsewhere with people.
Well, yeah, I think the flip side of that is like Animal Crossing, right? And how many things have gone viral through Animal Crossing, whether it's on Twitter, on TikTok, all these different places where people are making weird it's a very shareable game, and I think Snap could be that potentially. It'll be interesting to see. I'm very intrigued to see what they'll do with it, for sure. So no, I'm always down for a new Pokemon game. I've always had a love for the series, so even if I haven't played all of them all the way through, I'm a fan of the series in its entirety. So I'm excited to add another atypical Pokemon game too. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, just very briefly, I have gotten very liberal on my Oculus Quest with just buying small games that seem interesting to try things out. Like, even if it doesn't promise 30 hours of gameplay, I'm like, let's just see what this is. Let's try this. Let's experiment. I've hit a couple really good games, but the one I wanted to talk about in particular is a new-ish game, and it is called Waltz of the Wizard. And what's interesting about this game, it's not even really, as far as I've played it, and I don't know if I've cracked everything in it, but as far as I've played it, it's not... It is like a game, it's kind of a play space, but it is testing this new thing that Oculus Quest has released for hand tracking. So rather than having to hold the controllers, the camera picks up your hands, and you have to be able to do certain motions. So like, in order to move, you do a finger gun, point somewhere, and then drop your thumb or bring your finger in when you want to move to that place. Like, there's kind of like some plonking and like Doctor Strange-esque things. But so this whole game, Waltz of the Wizard, was meant to play with hand tracking. And so you set up in front of a kettle and you mix ingredients and you create spells that allow you to manipulate things in the room. So you can make things weightless, you can make fireworks go off, you can turn things into butterflies. But you're doing it all with your hands, so you're seeing them in front of you, but you're wearing the headset and you're sitting in this like wizard's tower doing stuff. And it's buggy as hell. It's not great all the time, but it was such a fun, that felt like what the promise of VR felt like to me, of this is going to feel real. Like, you're going to be in the game. You're going to be able to do this. Like, you're going to feel like you're really there. This was a really new experience for me. It's not a very expensive game. It's not a very lengthy game, but I think it's worth, if you've got a Quest or you've gotten any of the Oculus that do hand tracking, I think it's worth giving it a shot, because it's a fun little experiment, and it'd be a cool thing to put people who haven't tried VR before in and let them really, it's a little bit more of a free play around than like trying to get them into, I don't know, like really into playing Beat Saber or, you know, Pistol Whip or whatever, or Super Hot, that are a little bit more of a learning curve and a little bit more of a challenge.
I love the idea of exploring new ways to do VR, because it feels like currently there are some just known limitations, and we're still kind of like poking at the walls of those to figure out, okay, how can we expand the medium beyond what we know how to do? And anything like this that is taking a step outside of comfort, I appreciate, even if, as you say, it is a bit buggy. I'm looking forward to potential sequels such as Salsa of the Spellcaster to come later.
Yes, exactly. That one is all about dancing, mocapping dancing. It's definitely, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's a fun proof of concept. And I will say, right now, just in general, using the hand tracking to like operate in menus in just the Oculus itself is super clunky and unpleasant. Part of it is just getting used to it, but I generally still prefer the controllers for most of my navigation. But when it comes to getting to experiment with what games can do with actually tracking your hands, like Waltz of the Wizard was a really fun option. So, Bill, what are you playing?
Well, I've been playing a few different things lately. I've gotten pretty committed to a couple smaller things and a couple bigger things, and why don't we start with the smaller ones? I have these games in various forms, plenty of other places, but with the Switch Online service, I've been exploring the NES Online stuff and the SNES Online stuff, and because it's a limited curated library of games, for reasons, I am checking stuff I might not have otherwise checked. And that led me to looking at Vice Project Doom for the NES Online. It's this action-y platformer type game for the original NES, but it's really ambitious in what it's trying to do because you have three different kinds of stages. You have the regular, what you might expect type of stage where it's like you're a dude and you platform, and you run, the screen scrolls side to side, you got a sword and a gun, you shoot stuff. But then also there are driving stages that kind of play more like, a shoot 'em up where you have to drive through a highway and like avoid enemies and shoot enemies and stuff. And then sometimes it even goes into a first person shooter game where like the screen is scrolling and enemies are like jumping at you or like running in from the side and you have to like pick them off and like find more ammo on the ground and stuff like that. I admire that they were able to like make three somewhat workable different modes in this NES game, and they all play pretty well.
That's really impressive. That's such an interesting, and it's fascinating to me that something that ambitious, I don't know, I've not heard of this game before. You would think that something with that level of ambition might have come up.
I think it's partly because it released in the US in 1991, by which point the SNES was already out. And I feel like, just anytime you are transitioning generations to new systems, it like leads to some games getting left in the dust. And I think that's kind of what happened here.
That makes sense.
And then not to be left out, I took a look at the SNES Online and I played some Wild Guns, which is a... So there is a Wild Guns remastered version on all modern consoles. So you can either play this game on the SNES Online service, or you can play the remastered game for like $10 on like the Switch, the PS4 and stuff. And it's another strange shooting type game where, unlike most games of the era, so in the foreground is your character and they can run from side to side and jump and shoot and stuff. And then in the background are all the enemies. And you have to like both move your character and move a cursor or move your bullseye around the screen to shoot everyone. And like normally they'll just like pop up and then like you'll see a little indicator over your head. Like your character will flash a little exclamation point when they're getting targeted with a gun. Then that's a signal you have to like move out of the way. And there'll be like big explosions going off and... grenades will appear and you can like throw the grenades back at the enemy, and all sorts of different cool weapons you can pick up, like spread guns and like grenade launchers and stuff. And that was a pretty fun time. I played all the way through it in like 3 hours, which is why I'm guessing it didn't last very well or get a bunch of good reputation back in the day, is because it's a very short game if you were buying it new for $60 at the store.
Yeah. But it sounds cool, though. It sounds really interesting, an interesting setup that I've not really seen much of before.
And on top of that, it's a two-player game, too. So you can go ahead and play it with a second person. And one thing I tried recently on stream was I tried the two-player online service, and it was pretty good. I was actually pretty impressed by it.
Nintendo did a good online? That's shocking.
It's hard to believe, honestly. But like, what happens is you can host a session, and then a second player can like drop in as player two, and it's like all centralized on your system, and then they are the second player. And like, well, we were trying out River City Ransom and stuff like that, and it seemed to work just fine.
Oh, that's really, because I was going to say, I've been hearing a lot more actually about their online capabilities because of a very dumb game that I really want, which is Clubhouse Games. It's just 51 like mostly board or card games with some like toy, like a Rock'em Sock'em Robots knockoff and a foosball knockoff and stuff, but you can play Mahjong and Gamoku and Mancala and you know, you can play War and poker and all this stuff. But the part of the appeal of it is that you can play it A, online with other people, and B, that they don't have to have the game itself in order to play. So I'm happy. I want Nintendo to have good online services. They've not done an excellent job of it thus far, but I want that to no longer be true. So I'm happy to hear that this one plays well.
It's strange what they're doing with their online service, where they're like, I guess they feel obligated to charge something for it, but like $20 a year really is pretty insignificant amount. And then because they don't charge very much, it doesn't seem like they put much effort into it. So like you get very few perks with it. There's like Tetris 99 and the smattering of NES and SNES games on there. So, you know, I would pay a little more if they were willing to put more effort into providing a solid service.
And some of it's down to the way that the games do it too. Like, I mean, I love that Animal Crossing has online capabilities, but oh my God, some of it is actually physically painful the way that it works. And so, you know, some of it's down to the developers and the way that they do it. But I want more. I want more online connectivity. I want more with that. So I'm happy to hear it works. It works well.
One upcoming game, Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Remastered, I was excited to see that you can have, normally you need all four players to have a copy of the game, and you basically need four players to play the game right. But they're going to make it so that there are like segments of the game that you can play without actually owning it.
It's just the best way to get people into it. And like, I'm going to want to play, if I play that game with someone else that owns it and I enjoy it even a little bit, there's a solid chance I'm going to buy my own copy even if I don't need it. So thank you for making it more, like, easier to get into and enjoy.
Right, yeah. Like, there are ways to set up lower barriers to get people to want to play our game, and we should, hopefully, the game companies will continue to explore that. Fingers crossed.
Agreed.
I played through both of those games and beat them both using copious save states. I also recently played through SteamWorld Heist, which is one of the many games in the SteamWorld series, but you know, they bounce around to several different genres. So like there's SteamWorld Dig and SteamWorld Dig 2 that are kind of platformy type games, like that you are digging down into the earth and like you find minerals and you buy them to get upgrades for better platforming and stuff. There's SteamWorld Quest, which is a deck builder RPG where you like have different party members that have different cards, and then you draw cards out of the deck and cast spells with the cards. And this game is a little bit like the XCOM games, where it's like a turn-based tactical thing, except it's all in 2D and not, and it's a side view 2D, not a top-down 2D. And that's very unorthodox for that genre, and the way that they really take advantage of that is like one of the key gameplay elements is that all the pretty much all the different types of fire are not straight lines. You'll have the people who have their guns and like you can just fire them straight on, but a lot of times there'll be cover or different obstacles in the way, so you have to look for ricochet shots. And most of the guns come equipped with like a laser sight that'll help you line up the shot, and you can like see, all right, it'll bounce off here, here, and here, and then it'll hit the enemy in the back of the head. Yeah, like that's a really cool way to kind of like puzzle through the gameplay. And then there'll be also like arcing shots where like, you know, you can have explosives, but it's a grenade launcher, so you have to like arc the shot so it'll land in the correct area and hit the enemy. It's a high risk, high reward with those because, yeah, you can do a lot of damage, but if you're not careful, you'll bounce it off the wall and the grenade will come right back at your team and blow them all up.
That's really fun. That's such a cool variation on a pretty straightforward genre.
Agreed. And they further enhance it by making the main objective of most missions to be, you know, because SteamWorld Heist is you want to get in and get all the loot you can from the level and then leave. You don't have to beat every enemy. You just have to get all the loot and get out. So that means a lot of like tactical decisions where it's like, okay, we got like these three drops and there's a lot of enemies coming towards us and we're low on health, so we should probably pull back and then retry this mission another time. Or like you get the last item and then just like it's a frantic dash for the escape room while the enemies are like chasing you and firing at you and trying to bring you down before you can get out.
That sounds really fun.
No arguments here. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's frequently on discount, I would say. It was just on discount as part of the big Switch summer sale that is now over. It was like $5. And yeah, I would definitely encourage people who like turn-based tactical RPG style games to check it out. And lastly, I, after a long, long hiatus of almost like a decade, I finally have picked up a plastic instrument again, and I'm playing a lot of Rock Band 4.
Nice. Speaking of throwbacks, that's awesome.
I feel really silly. I tweeted about this, but for the longest time, I was just like, I can't really play Rock Band in here. It's going to be too loud. People are not going to want to hear the music blaring while I'm playing. And then I finally looked at the DualShock, you know, like actually looked at it and noticed there's a headphone jack in the DualShock. So you can just, you know, plug a pair of headphones into the DualShock and the sound will channel through there, and then you can just play the game without people.
It blows my mind that you didn't know that, because that's how I play Overwatch, is my headset that I communicate through and listen to the game through is plugged into my DualShock.
Well, I don't have a good excuse, okay?
That's fair. Okay. I accept your admission of guilt.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, because I did feel silly, but since then, yeah, I've really gotten back into it. I definitely have some rust still, but I'm about back to where I was. I usually could play, like, I can play pretty much every song on hard, and then some of the songs on expert. Like, I can play up to, like, 3 or 4-ish stars on expert, and then it just gets too hard at that point.
Yeah. Are you, what instrument, are you playing drums or guitar?
Guitar.
Okay. I used to play Guitar Hero like crazy, but then when we got Rock Band, I got the drums, and the drums are my favorite. So maybe we'll have to start a virtual band once the Rona lets up.
Hey, if you have the drums and you want to play, I would play some songs with you.
I don't, but I guarantee you I could find a set of them for like $5 on eBay if I look.
All right, you might want to check that. You might want to double check that.
I guess maybe it depends on how scarce they are nowadays.
See, so I think we've hit the point where scarcity, everyone just threw out all their plastic instruments. So now, because of the Rona, and because that scarcity demand has shot up considerably, like, they are close to or more than, in a lot of cases, what they cost when they were first, like, new in box.
That's terrible news.
Somewhat of a brag. Like, I picked up the guitar that I have for like $20 a couple of years ago. Just like, I was actually at a Magic tournament and they happened to have like a used game section in there as well. So I was picking through and I saw like they had a guitar and a copy of Rock Band 4. And I was like, I wonder. So it's like, you know, when I do that, I see that I'll like go on eBay and Amazon to like get a sense of like what the regular cost would be. And I was like, oh, this is a pretty competitive price. I'll pick these up and, you know, save them for a rainy day. And that was a good decision because, yeah, the particular guitar I have now, you can take that 20 and add a zero to it for how much it would cost if I wanted one now.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, it makes sense, though. I hadn't thought about it, but that totally, like, the increased popularity makes sense.
And, like, for a while there, they had stopped doing DLC, but they're doing it again. And it's like, you know, it's just like a trickle at this point. But, you know, there's new songs coming out every now and then. Like, they... Apparently, they had never had Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf in the game, but now they do. They only got it in there like a month ago.
That seems crazy to me.
Some of the stuff, I think, was when they were battling with Guitar Hero, some of the songs would like get locked up on their platform, and then, you know, you have to relicense them, and then sometimes the artist is like, I want this much money, and it's like, we can't. The harmonics is like, we can't afford that.
Yeah, I also can't, I'll be honest, can't entirely separate in my brain what I played on Rock Band and what I played on Guitar Hero.
Same here. I played Guitar Hero 2 was my first one, and then I played like a bunch of like Rock Band 1 and 2, and yeah, it's hard to know which one was which. I guess I should say some of my favorite tracks for potential embarrassment. Big fan of No Doubt, big fan of like their early stuff, like playing the songs like Sunday Morning and Spiderwebs and stuff.
Yep. Good era for No Doubt, too.
Back when they were still sort of a ska band. Let's see what else. Big fan of Many Shades of Black by the Raconteurs?
The Raconteurs, yes. Yeah, Raconteurs. That's one of Jack White's many projects.
So that's who Jack White is.
Yes, he is. Yes, of the White Stripes, primarily from what people know.
Yeah, also Follow You Down by the Gin Blossoms.
That's a throwback. That's a good throwback song.
Yeah, it's a great song from where I live, for the 90s. Not trying to FOMO anyone out there. It's just like, this is probably not the right time to go and try and invest in a Rock Band guitar. Copies of the games, I think, are still pretty inexpensive, although I did happen to look, and like, I guess the copies of Rock Band 3 have started spiking, because for a while you could import the song library of the older games into Rock Band 4 for a licensing fee of like $10 to $15. They no longer offer that for every title except Rock Band 3. So you can buy a copy of Rock Band 3, and then once you have added it to like your library on the PS3 or the Xbox 360, then you can pay $15 to add it to Rock Band 4, and then you get like 80 songs for $15.
Yeah, that's worth it. Oh, that makes sense.
You see how it works. Yeah. So I noticed copies of it now are up to like $35 online, where they were, I definitely remember they were like $5 at GameStop at a certain point. Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, I have a full Rock Band 1 set at my parents' home, but it's Microsoft. So you can't cross-pollinate the systems, but I can bring those from Buffalo to Chicago and we can jam on those.
There we go. It's a plan.
All right, Shelby, yeah, that's what I've been playing lately, so I guess we should call it there. I want to thank you one more time for stopping by to chat. If you want people to find you anywhere, where can they find you?
If they go into their bathroom, look in their mirror, and repeat video games 3 times into the mirror, I will appear behind them. But you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shelby_Fawn.
Excellent. As for us, we can be reached by email at somebodybitspodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, we're somebodybits on there. Follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at somebodybits. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please rate and review or download from Simplecast or stream via Spotify. We play games, twitch.tv/somebodybits, Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time. If you ask very nicely, and if I can figure out whether or not I will get a DMCA takedown notice or not, then maybe I'll play some Rock Band on there. Who knows? That's how you can reach me. But otherwise, just thank you very much and have a great summer.